Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is the Page Publishing Book Club. How you doing? I'm Alice Stockton Rossini. James Franklin is a retired teacher, principal, superintendent in Columbia, South Carolina. He's been taking notes for years, but it was the Black Lives Matter movement that prompted him to write Golden Nuggets, Experiences in the Old South, experiences that might surprise you. James, explain the title Golden Nuggets.
Well, I was born in a town called McCormick, South Carolina, and I was born in an all-Black community, and it was surrounded by gold and magnesium mines. And having been born in the center of three of those mines, I decided, hey, all of my experiences in Dawn's Alley were positive experiences, and I was born around a gold mine, so why not call the book Golden Nuggets, Experiences Where I Learned Something?
Well, I mean, you have African-American communities, successful African-American youth, prominent preachers. You really want to educate us on some positive role models, it seems.
Yes, very much so. There were a lot of great things, even though we were poor. Of course, we didn't know we were poor because everybody in my community was poor. So we considered all of the kinds of things that we learned from our parents and from community people as things that we needed to grow up. And we looked upon those things as positive things because we did fairly well, even though we were poor. People need to know how an African-American, especially a male, has experienced things in the Old South and the kinds of things that he went through and were exposed to. And perhaps they might have a better understanding of why nowadays people talk about Black Lives Matter. Black lives have always mattered, but I thought that people needed to see the real Black life and to see it through my lens. And that's why I put it in the book. There were 11 Black families who lived in Dorn's Alley. And we were right next to the town of McCormick, but all of our streets were made of dirt. And all of the other streets around the town were made of concrete. And we had no streetlights. So we felt that our community had been neglected to the extent that folks didn't see us as important. So that's why we're stressing the point that we were important. And here's why we were important. Here's some of our experiences. We did have some positive experiences with white citizens in our community. As a matter of fact, one of my playmates was a white guy. As a matter of fact, he's one of the richest white kids in the county. But he was part of the owner of Dawn's Alley's properties as one of their children. And of course, he would come into Dawn's Alley during the summer and we'd play and have a great time together. And of course, we didn't see race back then. We did not see how important it was, how unimportant it was. We just were kids having a good time. And a story is in there about Jennings Maccabee in terms of his relationship to us back in the South. And we got along quite well. And I put a story about him in the book as well, Jennings Gary Maccabee.
That had to be shocking to see a little black kid and a little white kid playing together where the streets weren't paved.
A lot of people would have looked at it that way, but of course, I was not the only black kid in Dawn's Alley. Jennings played with all of us. And as a matter of fact, we went skinny dipping. We had little creeks that ran through Dawn's Alley. And in the summertime, we'd go skinny dipping and just have a good time. And there were a few vines around and we'd swing on the vines and sometimes fall in the water. And it was just an enjoyable kind of thing. And again, we didn't look at race. As a matter of fact, during lunchtime, he would find a way to get provisions delivered in the community for us to have lunch at an old shed that his family owned. So it was really nice.
Well, his family had to be pretty open-minded then.
Fairly open-minded. I think we have to look at the folk ways and mores of those times. His family was pretty nice people, pretty fair kind of people to deal with. But again, you're looking at folk ways and mores. You're looking at, and I think there were a lot of, like the doctor who delivered me, we're looking at a lot of people who wanted to be different, but because of mores and forays and discrimination and expectations of white folks, a lot of white folks decided that perhaps they need to follow the folk ways and mores instead of being in today's terms, more liberal when it came to Black folks. I think a lot of them wanted to do better, but they were controlled by those things I just described.
Well, they were afraid.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know the example, like Senator Strom Thurmond. He was known as an arch segregationist here in the South. And of course, little did people know that he had a daughter who attended the same college I attended, South Carolina State College in Orangeburg. He would come by night and other times to see her. She just happened to be, a mixed race child who was fathered by Senator Strom Thurmond and a Black female. And of course, that was the other side of him. When I moved to Washington, D.C. after graduating high school, of course, I needed a job. And my brother, Roosevelt, was already living there, and he knew Senator Thurmond and he knew J. Fred Brizard. They helped me to get a job. As a matter of fact, Attorney Brizard was a lawyer from my hometown who ultimately ended up in the Nixon administration and was his main attorney when President Nixon resigned. He was from McCormick. So those are the kinds of people who helped me along the way. And they did not know that. So all white people were not considered as what we call bad people. Again, there were those mores and fores of folk ways of the times.
Let me ask you this. I mean, you sound like you've written almost a history book. And as an educator, how do you feel about the way history is taught in schools? Can we do a better job there?
We can do a much better job. I think the problem is that folks have not included, especially people of color, African-Americans in particular, have not done an inclusion of those persons in regular history books. So we've been absent there. There's just a dearth of information there about us. We've added some things over the years, but it became a separate kind of book. And as an educator, we were not interested in a separate book. We were interested in inclusion. Incorporate all of these things in a regular history book so everybody can learn. See, because what happened when they went to this, Black education kind of things, most of the kids who went and studied African-American studies were Blacks. I mean, gee whiz, that was not the intent of that. The intent was to make sure that everybody was aware of African-American history, but the best way to do that was to incorporate it in regular history books.
Do you think statues should come down? Do you think bases in the South should be renamed? Is that a good step?
Well, I think it should matter because of the fact that had the same attention been given to African Americans as relates to their history in the South, perhaps it might not be so bad. But when you exclude basically a whole race as it relates to Southern history and you accent other folks, then that to me doesn't seem to be a fair way to do it. So that's why I think a lot of attention is now being given to people who were segregationist and discriminatory type people as to their monuments and memorials and those kinds of things, as to whether they belong in the public square or whether they belong in a museum. And I think that's why you're having that big discussion today.
But no matter who you honor, they're human. And we need to remember that. I don't care what color you are. We're human. And Dr. Martin Luther King, I mean, my God, I mean, one of the greatest men who ever lived. Was he perfect? No. But I think we need to know that, too, that you can be imperfect and yet you can still make a difference and you can still be a powerful leader.
Right. And I don't know why there's been that hesitancy of a lot of people to let people know the real me, their real selves. Sure, we all make mistakes. We all come short of what we should be sometimes, but we don't belabor on those issues. We go about doing what's best for the human race as a whole. And I think if we focus on that, we're going to be okay. But we have to stop looking at things that divide us, skin color, where you live, how much money you have, and all of those kinds of things. That doesn't really help us. Just recently, through the advice of my son, I set up a nonprofit cooperation here in the state of South Carolina called Franklin Educational Services. And what he has advised me to do is to market that, to develop brochures and pamphlets to the extent that I can market myself as a motivational speaker and as a person who can present research information on how best we can move forward based upon our experiences of the past. So he has helped me with that, and I'm in the process of setting that up. And of course, I have a fraternity called Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated. I have gotten those materials about the book and all of that to those fraternity brothers, which is an international organization trying to get the word out. And of course, through the development of pamphlets and brochures and sending those to all of the superintendents in the state of South Carolina to let them know of my availability and the services that we can provide might cause us to get more exposure. I've also sent some press releases to local newspapers in the state of South Carolina with the same press release that Page Publishing has developed, and sent a copy of my book to five major newspapers in South Carolina with the hope that they will help in terms of publicizing this particular manuscript. So we hope to get it expanded in terms of the book and what it's all about in a more or in a larger sense and in a more diversified way. Because I'm not just interested in Black folks reading the book. I'm interested in non-Black people reading the book because of the fact that I want them to know that, hey, if you read this book, maybe you'll understand why Black folks get in the streets sometimes. Maybe you'll understand why people carry signs that Black Lives Matter. Maybe you will see a deeper feeling within yourself as to, hey, now I understand what's going on with those people. Because as the old Indian proverb says, you know, you got to walk a mile in my moccasin. So a lot of times we have to walk a mile in the moccasins of those individuals with whom we don't have that great knowledge of. And we may have a better understanding of them, and maybe we can get along better.
That would be great, wouldn't it, James? Thank you so much for your insights. Diane Ross is the kind of woman people confide in, and she thinks she knows what people need to have better relationships. It's what inspired her to write Men, Do You Feel Your Women? That and Steve Harvey, right, Diane?
He wrote the book, Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man. And when he wrote the book, you know, the book was for women, and just giving them tips on how to deal with men and relationships and things like that. So he was another inspiration for me in that respect. Because my mind went to, okay, what about our men? What can we teach them? Or, you know, from a woman's perspective, you know, to make suggestions where it can help them in their relationships. So those were the two things that inspired me to write the book.
So Men, Do You Feel Your Women is an advice book.
Mm-hmm. It just gives different tips how to sustain your relationship. I can just give you a few of the pointers. Trustworthiness. A lot of people don't have trust in their relationship. So I think one tip that's helped people is, you know, learning how to be trustworthy towards each other. Forgiveness. So many times people do not forgive each other in relationship. They hold on to things. One thing I talk about in the book is fighting fair. So many times we don't fight fair in our relationships. Just like, I don't know, are you married?
Yes.
Okay, Miss Alice, you know things about your husband that nobody know about. Your husband knows things about you don't know about. But sometimes when we get in arguments, we'll throw those things at them that we know are going to hurt them and things like that, where it's just information that's personal that you don't want anyone to use against you. So that's what I mean by fighting fair. You know, because once we say things and say words, we can't take them back.
Okay. If it's hard for you to trust, how do you get over that?
Sometimes people may have been betrayed as a child from their parents or a family member like myself. You know, I've experienced childhood rape. You know, I was molested by my uncle and my cousin at a young age, and that really affected me. I think sometimes when you deal with things like that, it's hard to trust people in relationships in this situation. That's something you have to first overcome within yourself. I think, you know, we got to pray about it. You know, we have to put things in God's hands.
Nice, Diane. Do people come to you for advice? Do people know you've written this book?
It's funny you should say that, because a lot of people come to me for prayer, because I'm a prayer warrior, first of all. So I do have people come to me and ask me for prayer and advice. You know, so young people are just so lost in different areas. And so I do try to mentor and give advice to our young women and try to help them and encourage them and let them know about their worth. I think so many times we as women don't know our worth. And we just allow men to do different things and just walk over us and don't realize our worth. Because a man is just a dessert. Everything else should come from you. You should know what makes you happy. Don't demand on a man to make you happy. Make yourself happy. But listen, this will make me mad. It's so much stuff out here for you not to get pregnant. Why are you getting pregnant? Why are y'all running around here, the man and the woman, doing all this stuff and not protecting yourself? For me, it just don't make no sense, Miss Alice. You know, it's too much stuff out here for them not to have to have all these babies after baby, and then can't take care of them. Come on. We got so much messed up stuff going on around our society. Stop letting our kids have to be subjected to all this foolishness when they don't. And that's where I'm at.
Are you handing this book out? What are you doing?
Oh, you know, I'm on Facebook. I advertised it. I have a internet broadcast that I do on internet radio every Friday from 1 o'clock to 1:30 on SoulNet, WKDH.com. So I advertise the book on that radio station. So I'm just slowly just doing, just like today, doing the podcast with you, putting it out there. So I'm just investing in different areas just to get the book out there.
All right, Diane. Good for you. Thank you. Eugene Anderson is a contractor, and he gave his mother-in-law's crumbling Washington State home some love, and everybody noticed. It was as if he brought this house, built in 1923, back to life. And when he was done, he couldn't stop thinking about it. So he started writing The Little House That Lived. And you know what? He wound up with a real This Old House story.
It's actually, the house is a metaphor for people, but the story itself about the house, particularly it's an old house, and it was basically neglected. It had been neglected for years. She couldn't do anything for herself in that old house, so it had just been in disarray and neglected. So the story there is that if you have something that has potential and someone comes into the picture and gives it the proper attention, it can be productive again. It's actually a metaphor for people. Home needed was in disarray. It needed repairs. It needed to be lifted up. And people also, you know, they can be neglectful. Family members, people can be on drugs. They can be just working too much, and they can neglect their family and their children. And that's the case with this home. It was an old house. And as the people started to drive by there saying, man, see, we've been seeing this old house for years. We know your mother-in-law, but boy, it really looks good. And that spurred me into the idea of thinking this house is alive. And that led to me writing. But the story is that neglect can be something terrible. And if someone does come along, see the need to help get someone, a person, a place, or a thing back on its proper place, it can be a productive part of society, or a person can be productive in society.
Were you able to lift up your mother-in-law?
Yes, we did. Oh, she was ecstatic. She was getting to the age where she couldn't live there by herself anymore, but she stayed there a couple more years, and she was so happy about this. We remodeled, new carpeting, new appliances, and she was just ecstatic. She was a happy person. But after a couple of years later, she had fallen a couple of times, and we decided to move her back to the old home where she was born in the Shreveport, Louisiana. So she's still there, 92 years old. Her and my mother the same age. So recently I've had my son, he has a friend who does photo shoots on it with her cell phone. She'll come and do with a shoot. That's one of the things we're working on right now. Put that on air, put that out. And I'm not going to sit on it. I'm going to keep pushing and moving, doing the things that I can do to get it out to the public. Almost like every night I'm driving the bus or I'm speaking to people about it, and people get excited about it. One lady got so teary-eyed just a couple of days ago. She read it and she just got teary-eyed because I was actually doing a project at her house. And she wasn't not a young lady, but she was real sad about the home and the idea that the house represents where she's at. She had to lift herself up and, you know, have faith that things will get better for her. But I'm working on her house, so she really connected that with the story in the book. That was just kind of amazing to me.
That's a beautiful thing, Eugene. That says a lot about that book.
Yes. It just needs to be out there. You know, I'm pushing. I'm going to call some television stations in the area here in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm going to call some television stations.
That's the way to do it, Eugene. Good for you. All right, we got to take a quick break, but we're coming right back. This is the Page Publishing Book Club.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple, iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-204-6099 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-204-6099 for your free author submission kit.
We're back on the Page Publishing Book Club. I'm Alice Stockton Rossini. Being a piano teacher was fun, but when Danielle Salmonson was one of five women challenged to write a good sexy vampire book, she got to work and won. She made up a word while she was at it. Put the words damn and nasty together, and what do you get? Damnaste. Now she's published Damnaste, The Immortals, the first book in a trilogy.
Damnaste, The Immortals is a story about a woman. Her name is Caitlin Tournay, and she is a photojournalist for a magazine. Her job is researching a mythological creature. So the story opens up in Amsterdam, and she meets one of the creatures she's been sent to investigate. And she gets pulled into this world of immortals. It's intrigue, it's erotic, and it's very challenging to Caitlin. And she actually winds up towards the end become a pawn in the game between good and evil. And she travels around the world. And the book has a lot of art in it from the old world. It has a lot of history. And so I spin the tale with all those concepts. And then later towards the end of the book, her best friend gets involved in this. And book one ends as a cliffhanger, which leads into book two. And book two has a resolve, which leads into book three. And in book three, I just take off with another character.
Okay, so let's stick with book one. So we've got the Prince of Darkness.
Yes, he is the antagonist, Agares. Ooh, he is evil and he is seeking revenge. Because the mythological creature, her name is Lady Juliet Renoir, she actually killed his brother, Agares' brother. So she is going after him, and Caitlin's a pawn.
Okay. And they're all vampires or what?
Well, I say Damnaste, the immortals, plural, because there are different types of immortals in this book.
Okay.
Lady Juliet is a siren succubus. She's a mixed immortal. And her best friend, Hans, is a vampire. And he is actually a character taken from real history. And he is a very famous artist from 1450, 1495, that time frame. I love spinning history, and I love travel, and I love music and art. And I've kind of incorporated all those things in the book. Just finished a press release with Page Publishing, and I'm getting ready to do a video. And I just joined two local book clubs here in the Houston area. So it's all just kicking off.
Book clubs are great, right?
Yeah. Well, I've had a lot of my friends read the book. And, you know, book one, and like, well, what do you think? Should I continue? And like, some of them are like, yikes, that is erotic. Well, you know, the title does say Don't Not Stay.
All right, well, it sounds like you're on your way.
I hope so. You know, it's been a lot of fun writing these books, and now I'm into getting them out there, getting them promoted, and, you know, getting the feedback and having fun with it.
Right. Well, good for you, Danielle. It's like you unknowingly found a whole new career.
I hope so. It's really fun. They say, if you like what you're doing, you'll never work a day in your life, right?
That's what they say.
Yeah.
From vampires to werewolves, K.A. Swanson read a story about shapeshifters that were children, and that inspired a character and a story that he found the time to write on his four-hour breaks at a chicken processing plant in Washington State. After self-publishing, he came to Page for some editing and some decent cover art, and now we have Wolf on Trial, Book One.
His name is Joseph Wolf. He is a werewolf. And his mission is to hunt down and kill werewolves. So, and he reports directly to the president Not lately, though, because this latest mission went very wrong. And local authorities, he got shot in the head and he lost his memory. And so the story opens with him being interviewed by a psychiatrist in order to determine if he's fit for trial for a triple homicide. Okay. And as he's recovering his memory, he knows he killed one, but not three. And so when he insists that he's a werewolf, the psychiatrist, well, he's crazy. He's not fit for trial. So he gets sent to the psychiatric ward where the psychiatrist works. And then the psychiatrist is dealing with those issues and his own set of problems. So there's a lot of focus in the story on the psychiatrist and overcoming his disbelief that someone could actually be a werewolf. See, the thing is that any myth, any legend, it has a basis in fact. It has a basis in truth. What I find that drives a story, any story, what makes any book readable is the drama between the characters. A movie can have a terrible script, a terrible story, but the drama between the characters will get people interested, and that's what they want to read about. Now, how do they react with each other? And so when you're dealing with something as fantastic as someone being a werewolf, what would a person's reaction be?
Well, yeah, considering he's a werewolf who works for the government hunting down werewolves, and it doesn't end here, right?
I have written two sequels to it. Again, these are both self-published, and they need the same treatment of getting properly edited and getting some good cover art. That's the plan. I want to see what the reaction will be of people reading this book. If there's a good response on it, then I'll find the time. I'll make the time to have the other two books in this series given the same treatment and put out for the public to read. The best way that I've found is simply by telling people about it. When I can actually explain what the basis of the book is, let them read the backstory of, on the back of the cover, I can convince them to read it. But that's a very limited audience. So the radio interview that we're doing now is something that I think would be a good step in getting it out there to a lot of people, at least get their interest in them. They can check it out. I will have to rely on the help of people that love werewolves and if they read this book and love the book, that they help promote it.
Okay.
If they want to see the sequels given the same treatment as this book, then they would promote the heck out of this first book, and then we'll see the other books coming along.
All right, K.A. Swanson, and that's it for this edition of the Page Publishing Book Club. Hope you're feeling spring wherever you are. An itch to write, maybe? Come on. Spring, new beginnings. Hopefully things are opening up where you are and you'll be inspired. You can always find inspiration right here when you download the podcast at 710WOR.com. I'm Alice Stockton Rossini. I'll catch you next time.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.